the stories that farmers, only they can tell, are really, really important to be heard at the Capitol. And that's one of the things that I really like about my job is how can we facilitate getting farmers there telling their story, because they're the best spokesperson for it.
Welcome to the 374th installment of Ear to the Ground, the Land Stewardship Project's podcast on family farming, regenerative agriculture, community food systems, and local democracy. I'm Brian DeVore, editor of the Land Stewardship Letter. It can be pretty easy to feel cynical about the creation of public policy these days. Animosity across the political divide, corporate lobbying machines, and lack of transparency make it appear that the average citizen has no say in what takes place in state capitals as well as Washington, D.C. However, once in a while, the voices of regular folks are heard, and it can result in initiatives that benefit, for example, the land, rural communities, the food system, and small and medium-sized farms. While the 2025 session of the Minnesota Legislature was far from a slam dunk when it comes to the positive role a transparent, democratic process can play in bringing about change, a handful of priorities that LSP's members were pushing for did make it to the finish line. The 2025 session's focus was to create a two-year or biennial budget for state programs. The agriculture budget the legislature passed contains provisions bolstering market access for direct marketing farmers and land access for beginning farmers, as well as support for farmers who are putting in place practices that build soil health and protect water quality. These wins didn't come about by accident. For the past several months, LSP's policy organizers have been working with our members and allies to hammer out priorities and advance them at the legislature. Folks traveled from throughout the state to meet with lawmakers, testify at hearings, and otherwise share their stories. They also sent emails, made phone calls, signed petitions, wrote letters to the editor, and even used social media to make themselves heard. The highlight of this legislative campaign was the Family Farm Breakfast at the Capitol, which this year was held in March, which gave LSP members and allies a chance to meet directly with lawmakers and other government decision makers. It should be noted that most of the issues LSP was working on were addressed in the agriculture bill, which was passed by the legislature during the regular session in May. However, there was some unfinished business when the regular session adjourned, so a special one-day session was convened on June 9th to wrap things up in order to avoid a partial government shutdown. Just a few hours after that special session concluded, I sat down with Laura Schreiber, LSP's Director of Government Relations, to talk about how LSP's priorities fared at the legislature. We also talked about the key role regular members of the public can play in pushing through positive public policy. Laura started our discussion by describing how the 2025 legislature came with its own set of political and budgetary challenges, which made for, as she put it, in true Minnesotan fashion, an interesting session.
Each legislative session has its own quirks, but I would say this year was especially interesting, using the Minnesota version of that word. But yeah, this year, you know, is a budget year, so legislators had to pass a balanced budget by June 30th, otherwise we'd enter into a partial government shutdown. We had, you know, if you look at majorities across the legislature, the Senate had a one-seat majority, the House was tied. But, you know, there was a three-week delay of the House being fully running and going. We had three special elections throughout session. You know, we had two were scheduled, one was not. And it was the first time since 1979, I believe, that the House was tied 67-67. So having to have co-chairs, one Republican, one Democrat for each committee. And then, you know, pile on top of that, there's a really grim budget forecast. So legislators knowing they're going to have to make some steep cuts. And then with like the looming budget forecast for 2028-29 also showed a huge, like more than $2 billion deficit. Mm. And then on the backdrop of all this is crazy uncertainty at the federal level with cuts happening, grants being suspended or paused. So legislators had a lot to work through. And yeah, you could see the difficulty of how to navigate, you know, new power sharing agreements where everything really has to be more or less bipartisan to move forward.
And the other thing, I guess, to lay the groundwork a little bit, some people may not be aware of this, but different sessions have different priorities. And this, you mentioned budget, and the reason budget was such a big overriding issue is this is a budget year or budget. What it is they call it a biennium. This is to pass the budget to run the government for the next 2 years. And they have to pass it, like you said. And as we speak, they just actually concluded their special session this morning, I guess.
Yes.
And if they hadn't, the government would have shut down by June 30th. So that's always been a little confusing to me, is how some sessions are more policy-oriented, some are more budget-oriented.
Yeah.
And so this was what they call a biennium. Now this will cover our budget for the next 2 years. Do I have that right?
Yeah, that's right. And we've been a little spoiled in Minnesota last couple of years because we have had surpluses. So it's kind of felt a little bit like a budget year every year for the last 2 or 3 years. But yeah, this year, you know, we had to meet that June 30th deadline. Otherwise, yeah, there would be a partial government shutdown. And already, like, some state employees had gotten a notice, like, government may be shutting down, or that's how the process works if we don't have something by June 1st. But yeah, last night or this morning at 2 a.m., officially passed all the bills off the House and Senate floors.
Kind of the process that LSP goes through with this, with every legislative session, is in general, we meet with members in the months prior and gather input on what they would like to see, what priorities they'd like to see us push, and talk about strategy a little bit and how we're in, you know, line up, well, what stories do folks have to share at the legislature, that type of thing. But can you give us a kind of, what did we go into the session with? What were some of the priorities that some of our members had asked us to kind of work on this year?
Yeah, this year, also just knowing that it was going to be a difficult year to get a lot done, wanted to focus on mainly three priority areas. So one being increasing market access for especially small, diversified growers. So farm to school and the early care program has been something that LSP has been engaged in since 2019 and are the co-state lead for farm to school policy with the Institute for Trade and Agriculture Policy. And yeah, so wanting to increase funding for that since it's been a huge market opportunity for small, mid-sized growers, but also getting healthy, fresh food to our students. Kind of a win-win for investing in both farmers and getting good food for students, and also early care. So in-home early care, center-based. And then, yeah, moving into looking at land access, we know is the number one issue that beginning farmers face to get started farming. And one program that Minnesota has been really successful and really a model across the nation is our farmland down payment program that helps farmers, yeah, put that initial down payment on land. So previously had paid $15,000 for a down payment, and wanting to look at how can we increase that? Because we know the average price of farmland can be anywhere from $5,000 to $12,000 an acre. So needing to increase that award amount, and then also the timeline that people can use that funding. And then lastly, something that has always been a huge priority for LSP is how can we make it more possible for farmers to adopt soil health practices, knowing, you know, the impact that has for soil erosion, keeping water clean, all that very important work. So the Minnesota Department of Agriculture, they have a soil health financial assistance program that helps farmers buy either new or retrofit equipment for adopting soil health practices. It's been really, really popular, has been oversubscribed by magnitudes of 5% or 500%,
yeah,
rather. And then one that's been really exciting is the Olmsted County Soil Health Program. So I think some folks are familiar with this, but really are trying to incentivize growers through three main practices: cover cropping, grazing and haying, and then adding in a third crop rotation, and oats has been the main one that they focused on. But all of this with the goal of, like, how can we reduce the amount of nitrate that's mm-hmm. going into our groundwater, especially in Southeast with the karst geography there. And this program was really developed by and for farmers, I would say. So it was a good model of people being excited about this and then having this program's unique in that it pays for the results. So some programs, you know, you just get the fee covered for your seed costs, but this, really wanting to see, like if you're growing cover crops, for example, you'll get that initial payment. And then if you get your covers 12 inches high, 24 inches high, you get additional payments. So wanting to expand that program across Southeast was the other big opportunity for this year.
Speaking of soil health, I think it's been really exciting to see in during the last couple of legislative sessions how LSP and our allies have been able to really get that on the radar of lawmakers, the whole soil health thing and regenerative ag. And yeah, I remember when we were initially kind of introducing some of these ideas to lawmakers and hosting them at field days and just really trying to get that in. And I really just talking to them and hearing them speak and sitting in on some of the meetings that our members have had with lawmakers, I feel like soil health has really become part of the foundational, like, okay, how does this, you know, if we're going to talk about climate change, for example, how does soil health fit into that? If we're going to talk about water quality, how, and that wasn't always the case at all.
No, not even, like, started doing policy work with LSP 5 years ago, and soil health was a word that was not commonly stated. And now you have, you know, agriculture groups across the spectrum all supporting the Soil Health Financial Assistance Program and talking about soil health, and legislators, like, routinely, it's in their vocabulary now. It's like we have to be talking about it.
Yeah, that's a win right there. That's great. Well, so that was our priorities. So let's talk a little bit to clarify things, the agriculture bill was passed during the regular session. What we were just talking about was the session, overall session. There was some unfinished business, so they had to call this special session to get that thing. But we were fortunate in that the agriculture bill was passed, and that was where most of our priorities were. Was passed during the regular session back in May. So, yeah, how did we land in these areas that we were working in?
You know, this year I feel like a lot of people are talking about really difficult decisions having to be made, cuts, that kind of thing. But for agriculture bill, we actually fared pretty well. Going into conference committee, which is where a smaller group of senators and representatives come together to pass one version of the agriculture bill. The House had $17 million over their like base funding amount to work with, whereas the Senate had to cut $300,000, so pretty widespread of what they can actually be able to do. For our issue areas, farm to school, we can start there. We really wanted to show how this is a program that a lot of people support. There's great demand for it, and it's really a bipartisan win. You're investing in farmers and our schools, especially rural communities. So we had great bill authors for this. So in the Senate, it was Senator Heather Gustafson, DFL, and then the House was Representative Nathan Nelson, Republican. He's up by Hinckley area, a farmer himself. And Heather Gustafson, she led on the free school meals legislation, so really like a natural, you know, marriage, if you will, between farm to school and free school meals. But all throughout session, really wanted to center like just how much of an impact this program makes. The ag bill, just kind of backing up for a second, makes up even less than one percentage point of our entire state budget. So, you know, $1 million in the ag budget can make a huge impact, whereas if you're looking at transportation, maybe not so much. Yeah, all throughout session, we had bill hearings where we brought in farmers, food service directors, sharing their story, sharing what this program has been able to allow them to do. And something cool was in March, we had a farm to school legislative tour and lunch out at Hutchinson Middle School. So Amy Haig, she's extraordinaire. She's been on this podcast before. And is the farm to school coordinator for Hutchinson, Litchfield, and Dasco-Cocato. And really showed like the program in action. Like the farms that they're sourcing from brought farmers to that lunch. Students who even helped grow some of the food and could see like just the community impact that these dollars had, and had two legislators join us and a number of their staff and community partners, but really kind of telling that story of like, here's what this can do. Hutchinson's a model, but what if we had schools all across Minnesota being able to support farmers in this way? And toward the end of session, knowing just how tight everything is going to be, worked with a lot of our members and leaders on gathering petition signatures. So we had almost 500 petition signatures, and then worked with farmers and folks on a steering committee to gather 31 letters of support. So we had farmers that were writing, like, here's how this has changed my business, the impact that it's made. We had really sweet letters from Roosevelt High School students who, if you joined us for our family farm breakfast, they also helped serve that meal. Yes. Yeah, they did a great job. So yeah, it was great to read their stories and, you know, what it means for them as students to be able to get this food. And all that was delivered to the agriculture chairs to really show, here's the folks that are, this makes an impact for, it's exciting and want to see a state investment in. So yeah, that was an exciting opportunity to really get farm school front and center and show like the win-win for both farmers and our communities. Yeah.
Yeah, and I know you were able to coordinate getting folks to testify quite a bit and tell those stories. And you get pretty cynical about, those folks even listening or whatever, but that's so key when you can get folks in front of there.
Yeah, because I know even for our Senate hearing, we really wanted to make sure, like, you know, farm to school is not just fruit and vegetables, but also livestock producers mm-hmm. can really have a great market with this program. So had two livestock producers testify there. And afterward, Senator Putnam, the ag chair, was like, you know, we really love farm to school, but we don't know where it's going to land with budget and everything. Like, it's a nice program, but you know, we're just not sure with, avian flu, budget cuts, everything else. But really wanted to be like, no, it's not just like a nice program, but really like necessary for farmers out there to count on this market.
I think the key to that is in a year where you're like, we're going to have to prioritize here. We're going to have to do some triage. If you had just come in and said, yeah, this is a great idea, but we don't have any examples of it, but we already had worked with folks and there was folks out there. And I know IATP had worked with some folks. So we did have a base of showing, and I just saw a report just come out that the Extension and IATP worked on showing the benefits of the program. And you were talking about fruits and vegetables. That's what people associate with. I was surprised to see in there the majority of farm-to-school connections were around proteins. It was about beef was a big one. So it's maybe a much bigger, I guess, more diverse program than maybe people might just associate it with, oh, we get sliced apples in the fall, you know, kind of thing. Yeah. It's really grown, and we do have really good examples, and it's having economic impacts in the community.
Well, and just to back up for a second, too, in the fall, Minnesota Department of Agriculture had a cooperative agreement with the United States Department of Ag to bring in $17 million over the next 3 years for both farm to school, but also getting local protein, vegetables, fruit into food shelves and food banks. And that funding was cut. So it really was like, you know we can't backfill that amount at the state level, but how can we make sure that Minnesota is like trying to preserve this program and add some money? Because we know just the impact that can have, like that study that IATP and U of M is doing. So yeah, it was great to get, you know, an increase, but also then connectedly, there's now a state pilot program for a local food purchase assistance program. And yeah, Minnesota Farmers Union worked really hard on getting that bill introduced. And we did a lot to support the testifiers and getting letters of support. So now there's going to be $1.4 million over the next 2 years to source, especially from the new emerging farmer definition. So really trying to source from like smaller acreage, but really trying to source, yeah, from farmers who are either beginning or emerging farmers and get that food into food banks and food shelves for no cost. So also a really cool win this session.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So overall, like farm to school, we got more funding. Can you just go over what we ended up getting with farm to school then?
Yeah, so for farm to school, over the next 2 years, there'll be an increase of $550,000. And then starting in 2028, the new baseline funding, if you will, or the set amount for farm to school will be $1.68 million. Up until this point, it's been $1.29 million. So a nice increase, especially in a year when we didn't. All our conversations at the start of session, anytime I go talk to a legislator, like, yeah, don't really expect anything. So it was a nice to be able to get that concrete win.
You mentioned this local food purchase agreement. So that was and we've done some podcasts on this. It was federal funding that was available to states, and it was a really cool idea where a farmer was paid a really good fair market price for their product. And then that was distributed to food shelves and places like that in their community. So they were able to feed folks in their community. And then that was cut. So this to clarify now, that kind of all happened during the session, so you were able to pivot a little bit and work with our allies to say, well, we need a state version of that. And we did get it. It's not as much, but it is a state version of that.
Yeah, and especially, you know, being able to pivot during session and then have legislators who really champion this idea of, like, we know Minnesotans are facing greater food insecurity, so why not support a program that can also create market access for our growers? And, you know, just kind of going back to the federal level uncertainty, like that funding for like farm to school, the local food purchase assistance program, all that was going to like support local farmers, get our food in our communities. And that money was taken to be redirected toward disaster assistance. Mm. Yeah. So, you know, your largest commodity farms were getting that funding instead. So it was a really good opportunity to pivot and make sure that, you know, smaller scale, diversified growers are also getting supported.
So I guess our other priority was land access and helping especially emerging farmers and beginning farmers get access to farmland. So how did we come out with that?
Yeah, this one was a little bit of a mixed bag at times, but because we were looking at, you know, one, increasing the award amount for the down payment assistance program to $25,000 to really help, you know, with that initial down payment, just knowing the cost of land is continuing to skyrocket, and then have a number of farmers who are not really able to utilize that funding within the 6 months that's currently allowed, so wanting to extend that to a year, because, you know, a lot of farmers, they're going to wait until they get that award agreement to start actually looking for land. It's, you know, not a ton of leverage if you don't have any money to work with.
And we should clarify, this down payment assistance, it was passed in the 2023 session. Ever since it's been passed, the demand for it has far outstripped the resources that are available for it. And it's a down payment program for beginning farmers to you know, because that land access is such a big issue. So, yeah, it's been clear that this is a very popular program and that we just don't have enough resources. And it really helps the folks who do get that access. So it's one of those things that it's in some ways a very simple idea of just getting a little bit of a step up and then getting them going. But it's just way underfunded.
Yeah, and I mean, Minnesota is unique in that we're one of the few states to have this program, so we're lucky to have it, but also, you know, we can continue to make it better. You know, also, we know that a one program isn't by any means going to solve the issue of land access and just the increase in consolidation of land that we're seeing, so wanted to also direct the Department of Agriculture to conduct a study looking at other policy levers to increase land access, especially for, you know, beginning BIPOC growers, folks who are historically make up only like 1% of land ownership in Minnesota. And we were working with, it was a great example of, I can go in and talk to legislators all day about why this is important. But on our lobby day, we had a group of farmers who are part of our Land Access Emerging Farmer Committee come in and speak with legislators, and we're still working on getting a bill author. And after one conversation with those farmers, we instantly got a Senate bill author. Yeah, so it was really great to be able to, you know, have people come share their story. And it's like, oh, yes, like this makes sense, no brainer. Yeah. And then, yeah, at the House side too, really, like Representative Rick Hansen was willing to take on this issue and work on it. In the end, we were successful in increasing the grant award to $20,000. We did not get the timeline extension, but are working with MDA. Folks can request an extension. We had Derek Ellis, who is a LSP Farm Beginnings graduate. He is a farmer over in North Minneapolis, come into the House Agriculture Committee. And he recently was awarded these funds and heading up against that six-month deadline and currently still doesn't have land. Yeah. Representative Rick Hansen, Representative Anderson, who are the co-chairs, heard his story and were like, you know what, I think we can get this done. Let's extend it to a year. But in the ways the legislature moves, that unfortunately didn't make it. But I think the argument, you know, at least was heard in some capacity.
Yeah, that 6 months, so it's a you get 6 months to basically go through the paperwork and the application process, and people go, 6 months, oh, that's a long time. It's not, if anybody's gone through something like that, it is not enough time.
Especially if you're, you know, partnering with, like, a farm service agency loan or a private bank loan, like, Yeah, a lot of different steps to getting that land in place. You know, this year we weren't actually asking for funding increase, just knowing where the budget was. However, they did give us a little bit of an increase, so we'll take that. Now the funding, it was just awarded at $1 million a year, and now we're at $1.25 million a year. So a nice little increase for that program too.
Well, again, that's a recognition that lawmakers think, because they are trying to prioritize. They can't just give out money to everything now because it is a tighter budget. They see emerging farmers and beginning farmers as a priority, that's the next generation, that they do have hope that there is going to be opportunities for them. And I think that's because we're able to bring beginning farmers to the Capitol to talk about their stories. It's not just some mythical idea out there. There are, as our Farm Beginnings program has shown, there's huge interest on the part of younger folks and beginning farmers getting into farming.
Yeah, especially for our lobby day, you know, we had like really great conversations with Representative Anderson and Senator Putnam, who got to hear directly from people who either were awarded this grant and couldn't utilize it, or, you know, had farmer friends who were in the same boat. So really, yeah, being able to put a face to like, here's who this program is trying to help, and here's how we can make it better. So yeah, it was really great to then also just be able to have a larger conversation around like, what is the state's role to help with land access? Since across the board, legislators know that the price of land is outrageous. But also, if you're not having, you know, thousands of acres as leverage or equity to purchase into something new, we need to be able to do something to break that cycle.
So kind of the third area that we were prioritizing is soil health and water quality, which go kind of hand in hand. But how did we come out on that?
Yeah, so for soil health, for the financial down payment assistance program for equipment, we were able, between the agriculture bill and legacy, which has like clean water funds, get almost $5 million for that program. So that was pretty exciting because originally there was a lot of cuts being proposed for this program. And LSP, with a number of other organizations, really supported this program, and our new soil health organizer, Kate Rowe, policy organizer, was working of gathering signatures, petition signatures from farmers, soil and water conservation district officers, and others to show like there's widespread support for these programs. And this is one that legislators should prioritize as they're crafting that budget. So yeah, we're excited to see a little bit of an increase there. And then for Olmsted County Soil Health Program, expanding that, there was actually two different bills for this program, so it was a popular one. Representative Andy Smith in the Rochester area, and then Representative Steve Jacobs near Winona area had introduced bills for this. And while we didn't get enough funding to expand the program, there was $75,000 included for an economic and environmental like impact assessment of the program to hopefully then be able to take that information and see, okay, how can we scale this to more counties across Southeast, but also could even be replicable in like the Central Sands area of Minnesota too.
So that was kind of the three priority areas, but there was some other kind of pigtails too for want of a better word, that some other stuff that went on that we were interested in and some of our allies were working on.
Yeah, one being there's a livestock investment grant through MDA, which helps with, you know, fencing, putting up shelter for animals, irrigation, watering, that kind of thing. But historically, it's only been like a 10% cost share for your project. So especially if you're beginning farmer, just starting out like wanting to do a fencing project, and you have maybe $10,000 worth of cost, getting $1,000 back is not always worth that paperwork and time. So Climate Land Leaders, who's a ally of LSP, really led on this, and we did a lot to support too. Had farmers like Tessa Parks, who's in the Northfield, North Strand area, who's a livestock grower, and then Hannah Bernhardt, who's up in Finlayson, also testified.
Both Farm Beginnings graduates.
Yeah, both Farm Beginnings, yep. But really wanted to switch it so you have a 50% cost share for the first $20,000. So really trying to help smaller budget projects, beginning farmers, especially for us, that was the main priority. and then a 25% cost share up to $220,000. And it was looking like that wasn't going to necessarily happen. Senate side, they had changed it to 25% across the board. Mm-hmm. But for us, it was really, really important to, you know, prioritize farmers like Tessa and Hannah, who, like, these are projects that I would not be able to afford and haven't applied for these grants because of it. So how can we really prioritize beginning growers and livestock producers getting started and diversifying what's on the landscape through this grant? So that was a cool win to be able to have. Yeah, something else is session two that was on a lot of people's minds was the taxes bill, of course. And something that, you know, LSP, we didn't necessarily lead on, but did support was right now farmers who are on less than 15 acres of land are not qualified as farmers for getting that tax credit for the agricultural land. So Senator Putnam and Representative Callie Herr led on this bill and were able to actually get it passed. So now if you're farming on less than 15 acres and, you know, might have a house or garage or other property on that land, if you have at least 1 acre of agricultural land that's doing more than $20,000 in revenue, you can now get that tax credit. Mm-hmm. And something else, too, that got some attention at the Star Tribune was floriculture. Wasn't counting as farming in Minnesota. So,
and what is floriculture?
So cut flowers is probably the most commonly known one for that one. So there was farmers that were working with their local representatives down in Southeast to get a bill introduced to add floriculture, and they were successful in passing it. And
for the tax credit.
Yes, yeah. So that they'll count as farmers, but then also for that 15 acres or less small ag homestead act. Yeah, because as of last week, we're talking on June 10th, but last week that was not included in the bill. Yeah, and just a shout out and appreciation for Kelsey Zabedra of Heirloomista Farms and then Allie of Bleed Heart Floral. They had a pretty on-the-nose Instagram post that I think got a lot of attention talking about how they don't actually currently count as farmers and wanting to see this bill passed. So I think that was an exciting one to get some attention and have farmers. They went up to the Capitol themselves and made this video, and now we have this bill included. So there could be a great correlation. Yeah.
It just goes to show there's all different ways of reaching lawmakers. There really is, isn't there? I mean, it's like, you know, social media, face-to-face, that kind of thing. The one thing, going back a little bit to this 15-acre tax break, again, I hate to beat this dead horse, but I think that is a moral victory in that we've gotten lawmakers to recognize what is, quote-unquote, real farming. And in their mind, especially some of the lawmakers who aren't kind of involved with the regenerative ag movement and the emerging farmer movement, that kind of thing. They're like, if you're not farming 2,000 acres of corn and beans, you're not a real farm. If you don't have a big confinement hog operation, you're not a real farm. An acre of vegetables is a lot of vegetables, and it was a very viable, I mean, 15 acres would be actually a huge vegetable operation. So to that recognition, I think is just, it's another recognition that it's kind of getting people to vary their view of what is real agriculture out there and what is a viable farming system.
Yeah, because I think one thing that's always been present in the agriculture committee is like, yeah, who counts as a farmer or what might just be like a hobby farmer, so mm-hmm. to speak. And being able to bring LSP members and farmers to the legislature and testify and share, like, no, this is my main income or my main primary source of income, really opens legislators' eyes to who is a farmer. And it can look all different sorts of ways. So, yeah, I totally agree that being able to have that recognition also then I think just starts changing the perception around who is a farmer, what does that look like, and can open up people's minds to more and different ways of growing for our communities.
So we kind of alluded to this earlier, but I think it's worth reiterating the importance of getting folks in front of lawmakers, whether it be face-to-face, through a phone call, or through social media, and telling their stories. And I'll say this again, people get really cynical about, well, they're not listening. They're, you know, I've been in hearings where the lawmakers are going through their phones, they're reading the paper, they're doing whatever, and it doesn't seem like they're paying attention, but it's a little bit of a numbers game. You get enough people out there telling their stories, and you have some examples of people going, oh, okay. And lawmakers, too, love to be able to, when they turn around and are trying to convince their colleagues, they love to tell that story, repeat that story that a farmer or whoever had told them at a hearing or in a face-to-face meeting, or it could be a face-to-face meeting in their office, or it could be they pulled them off the floor to just talk to them for 5 minutes or whatever. So I just think it seems like you must see this, that it's so important when it's a pain in the butt to get up there and everything, and people feel self-conscious and all that, but you really see that it pays dividends, it sounds like.
Yeah, and I think, you know, when you actually have someone coming in to testify who's not just like me, a lobbyist or that kind of thing, like a farmer who's working day in and day out, legislators perk up more. They want to listen. They want to hear your story. So taking the time to get connected to organizing, see how you can get involved, the legislature really does make a difference. And yeah, even here on like floor speeches when legislators are, you know, presenting to the rest of their colleagues, stories from farmers make it into those as anecdotes of like, here's why this is so important. So yeah, the stories that farmers, only they can tell, are really, really important to be heard at the Capitol. And that's one of the things that I really like about my job is how can we facilitate getting farmers there, telling their story, because they're the best spokesperson for it.
You can find a link to a blog summarizing how LSP's priorities fared during the 2025 session of the Minnesota Legislature on the podcast page for Ear to the Ground episode 374 at landstewardshipproject.org. If you have comments or suggestions about this podcast, contact Brian DeVore at bdevore@landstewardshipproject.org, or you can call 612-816-9342. By the way, it helps us greatly if you can give Ear to the Ground a rating on whatever podcast platform you utilize. And word of mouth is the best way to spread the news about our podcast. If you like what you hear, tell at least one person about LSP's Ear to the Ground. Thanks to Laura Borgendale, Western Minnesota musician, for Ear to the Ground's theme music. And a special thank you to all of Land Stewardship Project's members who make initiatives such as this podcast possible. If you're not a member, visit landstewardshipproject.org to learn how you can support LSP. Thanks for listening.